on this episode of Optimal Health Uncovered.
What ultimately gets you from starting your training plan to the start line of a race is consistency over time. So typically you're going to have a speed workout, a midweek long run, and then just a bunch of easy miles, which end up being pretty boring, but each run has a purpose. And we're going to define each type of run and how they help you. So just the combination of those and the collective program over time is what's going to help you rather than just saying, I can't do anything. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Optimal Health Uncovered for our inaugural Marathon Monday podcast series hosted by myself, Britt Gunzer, and my colleague, Brendan Copley.
Hi, everyone. My name's Brendan, and I am an athletic trainer and personal trainer at Performance Optimal Health.
And my name is Britt. I am a physical therapist at Performance Optimal Health. So our goal with this series is to provide those training for fall races with some information that's going to be helpful. So we want you to think about the information that we give to be as useful as the banana that you get in your post-race bag. So think of us as your post-race banana, but you get us a couple months before the actual race. Our series is broken down into five topics, starting on the second Monday of every month. We're going to have special guests on every episode, except for today. Today, after we introduce ourselves, we'll dig a little bit into what you should be looking for in a thorough training program, whether it be for a marathon or a half marathon, and some common questions or myths to be debunked. Things that we'll cover include how to develop a personalized plan for you, the importance and different types of runs, and how to incorporate strength training and more. So Brendan, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your background in running and what you're training for right now?
Sure. Yeah. So I started as a high school and collegiate runner and was running at the Division I level at Quinnipiac. Shout out to Quinnipiac. Woo. And yeah, I've taken a little bit of time off after the collegiate season and slowly have been building back up again. And I'm currently training for the Burlington Marathon, which is on Memorial Day.
Awesome. How's your training going?
It's been going pretty well. I think it like totally changes depending on the week. If you were to ask me, I would say like 1 week, I'd be like, oh my gosh, I think I could, you know, run a world record or qualify for the Olympic trials. And then the next week I'm feeling like I don't even know if I'll finish. So
maybe I'll roll across the finish line.
Yeah, exactly. But overall it's going really well.
So something we're going to touch on with everyone that we have on this show is talk a little bit, just so quickly, about what's your best run that you've had in the most recent weeks of training? And what's your worst run? Just so we can humanize how common it is to have bad runs, good runs, and how we mostly live somewhere in between.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say the best run that I had recently was when I was running with the running club Stampede, which is a Stanford running group. And we were doing like a 6 mile, just easy run. Started out, I was really tight in the beginning and I had just run a longer run on Sunday, so I was still recovering. But throughout the run, it actually ended up being totally comfortable, and I picked up the pace a little bit and finished really strong. It was one of those like 60 degree days where you could either be wearing either a t-shirt or a long sleeve, and either one you'd be totally happy,
right?
And then the worst run was a Saturday recently where I just basically I woke up 2 miles in, I was just, I couldn't even maintain a pace that I normally would be able to do on like a walk in the park, but it just really didn't feel good. Just long week of work, and ended up having to walk for a good portion of it, and just ran home with my tail in between the legs and called it a day.
We all experience those.
Yeah. So what about yourself? Why don't you go into a little bit of your background with running and what you're training for now?
So I started off how I think a lot of people do that did not run in high school or college. So I actually did run track for 1 or 2 years in high school, but it was purely to get faster for soccer. And I hated every second of it. And I would just run for exercise to improve my cardiovascular, get a sweat on after I lift at the gym, and try to lose weight, really. And so I was getting my doctorate at Rutgers in 2013. And a group of us who, none of us liked running, we just kind of agreed. We made a pact that we were going to run the New Jersey half marathon. One of us actually ran the marathon, not me. And so that was 10 years ago now. I can't say I got the bug right after that. It probably took me 3 or 4 years to do another race, but I cut like 15 minutes off my time when I did my second half marathon. And then I kind of realized, oh, we can really work on bettering yourself in this sport. And it's something that does not come naturally to me. I will be the first to admit it. But ever since then, I've done two marathons. I've done endless half marathons, and I have a goal of running all six world marathon majors now.
That's an amazing story. Yeah. I wonder if other people got into a similar progression where they started like, oh, I don't know if I really like it. And then something clicked and they
Now it's like, I can't imagine life without it.
Yeah, totally. So Britt, what was your worst run this last month? And then what was your best run this last month?
I'll start with worst and end positively. I had an interval run a couple of weeks ago where it was 3 by 8 minutes, nothing too indigestible. And my first 8 minutes felt great. My second felt considerably worse. And my third, it wasn't even like a conscious decision. I just kind of stopped moving halfway through and bent over and what the heck is going on? So that was disappointing after a couple of weeks of progressive improvements. I just felt super defeated by that. Same thing, ended up walk running in the easy cool down miles felt like I was climbing Mount Everest, but we have those days. And then best run was probably, I've been working with my coach to become less obsessed with my metrics, because I'll read my pace on my Garmin and I will obsessively just perseverate on it. And then I will mentally make myself think it's way harder than it physically feels. So I had a long run with a workout in it 2 weekends ago where it was a 3 mile warm up, 4 mile half marathon pace and 6 mile cool down. And I didn't look at my watch at all. And I felt pretty speedy during my warm up. I felt great during my steady state. And I even was able to end it progressively faster with my last mile being my fastest. And I just felt great afterwards and happy that I was able to execute that.
That's awesome. I think a lot of people can relate to the story that you just shared there. So Britt, what are you training for right now?
So I'm ultimately training for the New York Marathon in November, but I got into the Brooklyn Half, which is on May 20th. So that's somewhere in between.
Awesome. And what was your motivation for signing up for the event?
The Brooklyn Half is my PR race, and it's just a great course, really lively. So I just wanted to do it for fun. But my ultimate, like my total why, is because I'm always constantly looking to see what can I push myself to do uncomfortably.
Yeah, I hear that. I can totally relate to that. And I think that is 100% my motivation as well, too, for signing up for the Burlington Marathon.
It's yeah. Just,
what can you challenge yourself to do? And
right. Yeah. I think a lot of us get into that, and many people have many other whys of I'm running this in memory of someone, or because I physically wasn't able to, or because some people physically aren't able to. So something that we will talk about now and probably in subsequent episodes is how important it is to have a reason that you're doing something, whether it be, I simply want to finish a marathon. I want to beat my friend, whatever it is, it's personal to you and it is deep enough that it will motivate you to get through your training. But if you don't know what it is, you don't identify it correctly, then you're kind of going to be floundering week 16 when you really don't want to do this anymore. Yeah,
you hit the nail on the head with that one.
Yeah. So I guess it's time we should talk a little bit about what a thorough training plan looks like. So let's start off, Brendan, by talking about options for a training program.
Yeah, so I think we can break it down into three main options. First being some sort of online pre-formulated kind of a Hal Higdon program.
Yep.
You could potentially hire a coach, so having the coach write that program for you. And then you could potentially program yourself. You could basically write everything out for the months leading up to the race and go from there. So I'll start with going through some of the pros and cons to doing an online pre-formulated program. So the pros would be, you know, that it's definitely inexpensive. You can see the whole layout at a time and then plan accordingly. The cons, though, would be that it wouldn't be necessarily tailored to yourself. And you'd have to modify on your own without really any feedback on whether that's a good or bad idea.
Yeah. And I, as a novice runner, someone who didn't have experience really working under a coach, that's absolutely the first thing that I used when I did my first half marathon. And I didn't even know what they meant. Like they would say 3 miles jog, 3 miles run, 3 miles jog. And I just did everything at the same pace. So that's one thing too, that's tough with that. It's not really specific. So that's why I ultimately hired a coach when I started to really get serious about it. So there's definitely pros and cons with that too. It's personalized, it's flexible. The person coaching you hopefully has a good amount of experience with someone at your level that has the same goals as you. You'll get feedback, you'll get advice, you get race planning. A major con that you do have to address is the cost of it, because you usually have somewhat of a monthly fee, or maybe just for the total program, and that's not feasible for everyone. And sometimes you just get paired with a coach that doesn't work for you. So I can speak to finding a good match, which is probably the most important thing. I'm on my second coach that I've used currently. I just didn't feel my first one was a great fit. He was kind. He was responsive. He had an excellent running career himself, but that didn't necessarily make him a good coach for me.
Yeah, I think that's hitting the nail on the head there, where somebody also could potentially be a very good runner. And I think a lot of times we look to that for the novelty of it. Like, oh my gosh, this guy won the Boston Marathon, therefore he's going to be the best coach. But I mean, that's an extreme example, but I think there is an element of the person that is a good runner doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be a good coach.
Yeah. So my coach now primarily trains what he calls amateur runners. And that's absolutely the subset that I fall under. So that's his experience level. He himself is a much more experienced and decorated runner, but he works specially with what I am seeking out. So that's what you need to do. You need to make sure it's a personality fit, it's an experience fit, and they know what they're doing for you. So our third option is doing it yourself. So Brendan's going to talk about this because he's doing that right now.
Yeah. So just to preface this a little bit, I think this is only really appropriate for somebody that has done a number of different training programs in the past, and they know what's worked well for their body and what hasn't. And the pros to this would be it can be flexible, so you can listen to the cues of your body without feeling the pressure to run a certain number of miles. But then the cons would be it can be too flexible, and you might not hold yourself accountable in the same way that a coach potentially would. So now that we've talked through some of the different training styles and training plans, I think it's good to potentially break this down a little more into what is the bulk of each of these training programs.
Yep.
So there are five main categories of workouts that you'll see in a workout plan. There's a long run, an interval or speed workout. There's tempo runs, or could also be categorized as threshold runs, cross training, and then recovery runs. So let's start with long runs. Britt, I wonder if you could go into basically what the purpose of a long run is, and maybe even delve into what's the difference between just long slow distance and what is marathon pace, and why there should be a difference potentially.
Yeah. So starting off, if you're a novice runner, really just getting into this, the purpose of a long run is to have a long, slow duration. So you're on your feet, you're at a conversational pace, which we'll dive into what easy runs really should feel like. And the goal is length of time, not even mileage, length of time. I'm going out, my longest run is 45 minutes. So today I'm going to try and do 50, length of time. It should be comfortable. You shouldn't feel totally wiped afterwards. You should feel like the actual duration of it is a challenge for you, especially mentally, but you should be in a really comfortable aerobic area. The reason why this is important and lucrative for us is because spending time in that low level, 60 to 70% of your heart rate max aerobic zone is where we start to improve our aerobic system. So everyone remembers from high school biology, the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell.
Oh yeah.
And it's true. It still is even today. So the long, slow duration long runs is where we actually develop more mitochondria. So that's the purpose of, it's not just you repeat it and eventually it just feels better. You're physiologically changing your body so that you truly can handle longer durations and ultimately higher speeds and such.
So for those that are trying to get a better sense of their program and, you know, how they should shift their percentage of, you know, how much of my distance throughout my week should be my long run, do you have any general percentages or some data that you could give the listeners that might be trying to do that for themselves?
Yeah, generally, and this is going to come back to just overloading your body and trying to avoid that as best as possible. You don't want to be doing 50% of your weekly mileage in your long run. So if you do 2 miles three times a week, and you're running 10 miles on Saturday, you're really setting yourself up for a pretty high risk of injury because your body just simply isn't used to that load that it's going to see in the 10 miles. And I also want to touch on, because you asked me before and I didn't quite hit it before, what's the difference between a long, slow duration and, let's say, marathon pace if you're training for a marathon? So marathon pace by nature, and we'll get into this later, is going to fall under a tempo pace, essentially, when you're training for a marathon. You shouldn't really be hitting it for the entire duration of your longer runs once you get up in mileage, because it's taxing your body. There's a reason why we taper. There's a reason why you have to recover after you actually run your marathon, hopefully at marathon pace, because it's a doable pace for that distance, but it's a lot harder than a long, easy, slow duration run.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I guess one question that's still relevant for this is, for somebody that's, you know, creating their own program or trying to understand their program a little bit better, and they only have like one day of week that's available for them to run, it is the long run, you know, the only run that matters? Or how could you, do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, first, if you only have one day a week, you probably have no business running, training for a marathon. And I don't know if you'll make it to a start line. So think about why you're doing it and carve out some extra time in your week. But the long run is really important, especially mentally and exactly what I said before. Physiologically, it's going to help you build your aerobic base. But what ultimately gets you from starting your training plan to the start line of a race is consistency over time. So typically, you're going to have a speed workout, a midweek long run, and then just a bunch of easy miles, which end up being pretty boring, but each run has a purpose. And we're going to define each type of run and how they help you. So just the combination of those and the collective program over time is what's going to help you, rather than just saying, I can't do anything, so every Saturday I'm going to increase by 1 mile from 10 miles. It's not going to get you there.
Yeah, that sounded so doom and gloom. I think some of your runs won't be fun.
Yeah, that's it's true. But,
I think that's where also maybe running with a running club or finding a fun place to run definitely helps fuel your passion for the sport, so it just doesn't all feel like doom and gloom
and just mundane miles by yourself. But we'll touch on that in a later episode.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so we touched on long runs, and now let's go into speed work in general. So what is the purpose of speed work, Britt, and how do you break that down into multiple pieces potentially?
So speed work looks different workout to workout, week to week. It can change all the time and depends on what you're training for. A 5K speed work looks completely different than marathon pace speed work. So I'll specifically talk on marathon pace and half marathon pace speed work, and maybe Brendan can touch on the shorter distances because he's got a little bit more experience with that than I do. So we have two like key notes that we call speed work: tempo work and threshold work. And a lot of people use it interchangeably, but if we're textbook defining how we use them, they're two slightly different things. So a threshold run, the term threshold is used to describe your lactate threshold. So lactic acid is a byproduct of aerobic metabolism. It's something that's going to build up in your bloodstream, and you can handle it, and your body can metabolize it as long as you're going at a certain rate. When you start to reach what's called your lactate threshold, you're going to see a high increase in the lactic acid buildup that your body is not able to keep up with and metabolize. And eventually you'll simply not be able to keep on going at the pace or the intensity that you're going at. And typically, depending on your fitness, it's something that you can handle for 20 minutes to 60 minutes. Ultimately, if you're fitter, it's going to be something that you can handle for about an hour. The way to determine that scientifically is doing a blood lactate test, which you can do if you have access to an exercise physiology lab, and most people don't. Another way of doing it is using either your 10K or half marathon pace, depending on how long each of those events takes you, or using your heart rate. It should be around 80, 85, maybe even pushing into 90% of your max heart rate towards the end. A tempo run can be used, especially in marathon and half marathon pace training, is as your marathon pace or your half marathon pace, usually no faster than your 5K pace, and when you're training for those kind of distances. So it's something that you can sustain for longer than your threshold, but not much. So let's say your threshold pace is 8 minutes per mile, maybe your tempo pace is 8:15. So it's something that you're still challenging yourself. You're able to do the leg turnover, you're able to aerobically handle it a little bit easier, and therefore you can do it for a little bit longer. So getting into how that gets added into your training program, usually people will have 1 to 2 days of speed work during the week. And then sometimes they add in tempo work during their long run. So I touched on why novice runners are going to just do long, slow duration for their long run. But once you get experience and once you get used to what your marathon pace or half marathon pace should look like, oftentimes your long run has a couple miles of warm up, a couple miles at your goal race pace, and then a couple miles of cool down.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then for even deeper into that, if we were to go into more of like speed play where you're doing intervals on the track, if you're not necessarily training for a marathon, but you still want to incorporate some sort of speed training for that, it's a little bit trickier, but you might use something that's called your VDOT, which is, yeah. Do you want to chat on that a little bit more too?
So it's calculated. I mean, do you want to? I've been talking all the time.
I'll say something on that. So your VDOT is basically your VO2 max, which can be calculated either from a test that once again is in a lab and it's determining your maximal oxygen output. And then it also could be calculated from your watch, depending on what watch you have. It can calibrate your heart rate data and then specifically say, hey, your VO2 max is right around here. Then you can take that to this giant, wonderful chart that extrapolates what your VO2 max is to what your training pace should be at if you were to do, you know, a 1 mile interval on the track, or if you were to do 800 repeats on the track, if you were to do 400 repeats. So from that too, that's also a good way that you can break down what you're doing for both your tempo or your threshold pace, and addition to what your long run should be and what your easy run should be. So that's another good way to just determine pace from there.
Yeah. And I just want to add to that, a nice way of getting accurate numbers for that is to actually sign up for like a local 5K or 10K, give it all you have and see what your body can do. And then once you input that number, it's going to spit out what your interval should look like, what you're maybe looking at for your marathon or half marathon, that kind of thing.
Okay. So we've talked about our long runs and now we just touched on our speed training. Let's delve into easy runs. So what is the purpose of an easy run?
Purpose of an easy run builds on that aerobic base and also helps you to recover in between your what I call quality sessions, where you're digging a little bit more into some pace work.
Gotcha. Okay. And then I have heard some talk about the 80-20 rule. Do you know what that is, or can you talk on that a little bit more?
Of course I do, Brendan. So 80-20 is just saying 80% of your runs should be easy and 20% should be taxing some speed work. And if you look at that, you go, oh my God, that means I'm going to be doing 80% of my runs really easy. But that's if you look at it of, okay, let's say I run 5 days a week, four of those runs are easy runs. No, it's 80% of your miles are easy miles. So you can do all the speed work, but the easy miles include the warm up. They include the cool down. They include the rest periods in between your intervals. And so that's what we found to be most successful with preventing overload and allowing your body to recover, because that's when you actually make the physiological improvements, during the recovery period, not during the push period during your speed work. It's during the recovery period. And if you're not adequately doing your easy runs, if you're taxing your body too much, you're kind of always on your heels and you're never able to build up to what your potential is.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think it's a common myth that the 80-20 rule just applies to, you know, only your intervals or only your training program throughout, that it actually is both of those. Okay, so let's touch a little bit more on just cross training. We've hit on the majority of things, but I think cross training is an interesting piece to touch on as well.
First, what's your favorite form of cross training?
Oh, I would love to say swimming was my gold standard when I was in college. We had access to the YMCA, and that was pretty helpful. I found it to be relaxing, and then also I felt like I got a pretty good workout from it. What about you?
It's an excuse to use the Peloton. It's so fun. I love Cody Rigsby.
Cody.
The purpose of it is to, we're going to be sick of hearing me say aerobic base, but to build on your aerobic base without so much tax on the body overall. So really, if you look at running, it's pounding. It's a lot of shock that we're absorbing. But in a pool or on a bike or on an elliptical, you're not doing those things. So if you do, studies show that 40 minutes after you hit that 40 minutes, you're really doing some aerobic activity on the bike or the elliptical. And it's easier on the body. So it's same as what I said about an easy run. It helps promote recovery, but it also keeps to build that aerobic energy system.
Awesome. Yeah, that's super helpful to understand. So I guess the next part is going through trying to understand, if we were to create our own program or better understand our own program, and you're slowly building this program over time, Do you have any idea of the percentages that you should be increasing each week for your total mileage, or kind of rules that you could abide by for that?
Yeah, so everyone's probably familiar with what we call the 10% rule, and that means you don't want to increase your mileage or your intensity, but that's harder to objectively measure, but your mileage or your time on feet by more than 10% each week. So the body, the human body, the cardiovascular system is going to improve at a quicker rate than the musculoskeletal system. And we're talking about running and running injuries. Musculoskeletal system primarily includes tendons and bones, sometimes muscle as well, but that's usually more of an acute thing. So for example, bone stress injury risk peaks 4 to 10 weeks into a training program, whereas you may be feeling great cardiovascularly 4 weeks into your training program and really want to push it. Your bones haven't quite caught up to absorbing the stress of every step. So even though you feel good, that's a wonderful thing. You want to continue to feel good, so you don't want to ramp things up too quickly.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think a lot of people get into the mindset of, oh, I haven't run in forever. I got to whip myself back
right
into shape.
Right. So and then I'm they end up on my table.
Yeah.
And exactly. It's not fun for anyone.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think we've talked a good amount about what just the running portion of training looks like. And now we're going to hit your bread and butter, which is, why does strength training matter to runners?
So I think you can break this down into three major things. First, it can decrease your risk of injury. So instead of relying more on your joints, your bones, your tendons, things like that, if you're developing your musculature, then you have more support for as you get into the later stage of training, being able to basically not pound on your joints. The next is more of your muscle activation. So from a sports performance standpoint, if you have an increased amount of muscle strength, then you're going to be able to each foot strike, be able to propel yourself forward more efficiently. And that ties into the third one, which is just your improved biomechanics and running economy. So it's all about efficiency. And then also just being more fatigue resistant towards the end stages of races or your training blocks. So I think my personal experience with this was in high school and college, coaches didn't emphasize it as much because they just felt like if you ran more that you would get faster. And to a certain degree, there is some truth to, you know, running more will eventually make you faster. But I think the strength training definitely plays a huge role in supporting you from a longevity standpoint and also, you know, reducing your injury risk for sure. When I finished college, I definitely was still trying to keep that same mindset, just train high mileage, but I was starting to just get so burnt out from these high mileage without having the actual skeletal support. And I was maxing out at about like 30 miles per week and I would just get injured every single time. I just kept hitting that same plateau. And over the last couple of years have been really trying to be specific about my strength training and implement it 2 to 3 times a week and before my building phase. And I've been finding that I've been able to hit 56 miles per week and finally actually feeling healthy again. So it's been really cool to see that progression. And I think strength training has a huge role in that.
Yeah. I think most of us learn this the hard way, myself included. I have a similar story to you. I won't get into it, but eventually we do learn our lesson, and I'm the same way. 2 to 3 times a week, I'm doing something with dumbbells or barbells. So how do we incorporate strength training? Let's dig a little bit into that. So what are some people's options for strength training?
Yeah. So in regards to options, I think it's actually can be broken down into similar categories as running programs. So you have the online, just general strength and conditioning programs that you could find. And then you have a skilled personal trainer or coach that could help break down your program. And then you could also write your own program. So, and the pros and the cons are very similar to what it would be if you were to compare it to the running training program.
Right. So let's say I'm a beginner runner and I'm new to strength and conditioning, or not even a beginner runner. I'm just new to strength and conditioning. So what does my program look like and how is it different from just general training?
Yeah. So in regards to just the beginning program, not even related to your runner specifically, you want to try to have some sort of an upper body push and pull, lower body push, pull, and then some sort of core movement. And that can even be broken down further into having a one arm push, pull, a two-arm push-pull, and then same thing for the legs. So I think that's like a very good template to try to just make sure that you're checking all of your boxes from a program standpoint. And then for a runner, you definitely want to actually still include those same movement patterns, because as a runner, you know, you're using your whole body.
Right.
So I think it's good to not neglect your upper body strength and your core strength. And it might be even more specifically tailored towards more hip dominant movements, where you might have some additional strength and conditioning for glutes and core. But it isn't going to neglect any of those major movement patterns.
So how does it change when you're training for a marathon? Because it can be daunting for people to go, okay, now I'm carving out X amount of hours to run, but what does a strength program look like? What kind of repetitions, what kind of sets, how high in weight should we be going? That kind of thing.
So for marathon training, I think it's important to think about the general training cycle, with your preparatory phase being a little bit higher in the number of days that you're doing strength and conditioning in general. Also the highest load in general, from a total number of movements as well as just volume of work. And then as you progress throughout, you might decrease the number of frequency of days with strength and conditioning in order to make sure that you have energy for your running. As far as sets and reps goes, I think there's definitely some thought process where you might think that, okay, you're only going to tap into muscle endurance by doing 3 reps of 16, 17, 18, like these crazy high number of reps. But I think there's still a lot of benefit to keeping, you know, your rep ranges relatively low and making sure that you're still maximizing your strength gains, even if you're a runner per se.
And what days, like, let's say I'm running 5 days a week. 3 of them are just total easy recovery days. 2 of them are workout days. What days should I be lifting?
Yeah. So I think there is some debate with this, but personally, and maybe you agree with this, is with your easy days, you want to keep them easy. So
yep,
that means you're going to not lift on that day, but you might actually do a lift on your harder workout day in order to make sure that when you're resting, you're really, truly resting.
Yeah. If we dial back to what the purpose of a recovery run and an easy run is, it would totally defeat the purpose if we then go and tax ourselves like crazy with strength training following that. So what would you say to the person who only has 2 days a week to lift?
Yeah. So 2 days versus, you know, 3 or 4 days, it's going to switch into making sure that you're hitting your total body movements instead of just segmenting it into doing a push day Monday and then a pull day on Tuesday. And then, or you could segment it into only lower body on one day, upper body on another day, if you're doing 4 days a week. So that, yeah, that 2 days a week, it's going to be, you know, more of just bang for your buck.
Compound movement.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah.
So a lot of people get into marathon training and they already have something that they love, F45, Orange Theory, a spin class, that kind of thing. How do we incorporate this into it so you don't go from doing that all the time to then having to completely stop? How can we work in other workouts that people like?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the easiest way to do it would potentially be putting it in with a cross training day, maybe.
Okay.
Where you might already have contemplated that, okay, I'm not doing my heaviest run, my hardest run on this day, and then even have a recovery day the next day. So you have an appropriate amount of recovery, because F45 is more of that high intensity training.
Right.
And it also is cardiovascularly taxing. So you want to make sure you still have a little bit of recovery from that before hopping into your next hardest workout.
Yep. So I think we've covered everything we wanted to cover with general training. I have one heavy hitting question.
General training reporting for duty. Sorry, wanted to add that in.
I love that. What is your favorite? Wait, should we go back? All right, keep it. My hard hitting question is, what is your number one hype song? What are you listening to before you have a really hard workout or you're about to do a race?
Oh, definitely Rihanna.
What song?
All right, I gotta go with Please Don't Stop the Music by Rihanna.
A classic.
Of course. What about you?
Okay, I've got two. Zombie by the Cranberries. Don't judge me on that. Oh yeah. Or Knuck If You Buck by Crime Mob.
Oh my gosh.
And that tells you what generation I am.
Yeah, seriously.
So I think that's all we've got in store for everyone today. So just so everyone knows, in the future, we're going to cover some really great topics, including the importance of building a support team, fueling during training and racing, which is something that most people don't nail until they've experienced it a lot, footwear and mental performance. And each of these topics is going to have a guest. We're going to have a guest talking to us who is an expert in the field. So we will play more the role of hosts rather than talking about what we know. We'll be asking about what they know, just to give you some great information to get you ready and get you to your start line. So on that note, I think we're out. And thanks for listening to the inaugural Marathon Monday.
Woo!